We'd like to welcome everyone to the study session Mesa City Council for Thursday, October 9th, 2008. We'd like to excuse Councilmember Dave Richens, who's out of town and unavailable, will not be joining us by phone either. And we'll begin with item number one, hear a presentation and discuss transit and light rail alternatives for Mesa and proposed general regulations for light rail transit service.
Good morning, Mayor, Council. My name is Mike James from the Transportation Department. We've got two items we want to talk about, both relating to light rail this morning. With me today, I've got Larry Engelman. He's a safety and security director from Metro. As well as I'd also like to acknowledge a lot of the team that's been working on this item that's going to come before you October 20th at your regular city council meeting. Donna Bronski, Kathy Bowman, a lot of support from police to get this policy and this ordinance written. What we're looking at, and we just wanted to give you a brief overview of what's coming to you as a council item on the 20th, is really the general regulations relating to use and conduct on transit vehicles. And we indicate this transit vehicles because while this is ideally being put in place for light rail, these rules could apply to bus if we had a situation where we needed to go on and wanted to find someone on those bus as well. But because we have onboard fare secure or onboard fare enforcement and security, it's really more applicable that we need this ordinance in place so that we can make sure that we have a safe ride on our trains. One of the other points I wanted to bring up is Tempe and Phoenix have very similar ordinances, so that we're going to have a consistent set of rules and conduct on the train throughout the 20-mile system. And as you know, we need this in place before the service begins on December 27th. Some of the key elements of
Mike,
this.
I'm sorry. Yes. When you say very similar, how similar? Are they like mirror images? Are they duplicates? Are there different? What are the differences, if any?
The differences, if any, in the ordinance is really the legal language, not so much the intent of the conduct that we're enforcing.
Okay, so somebody is doing something in Mesa when they cross the line, that all of a sudden doesn't change to be something that's not acceptable. It's merely how it's described?
That's my understanding, yes.
Mayor. If I may, they were written by a committee composed of representatives of all three cities, legal departments, police departments. They're virtually identical.
Okay. Thank you.
Mayor, if I might add, it's the only difference is so that we could fit it into our respective codes. All the substantive issues are the same.
Thank you.
Thank you. So really with the key elements that we wanted to share this is it really enables this onboard fare inspection and the security and inspectors that will be doing that enables them to do their job. It really identifies the unlawful or the conduct that we really don't want to happen on the train. We don't want vandalism. We don't want people blocking aisles. Kind of all the things we learned in kindergarten. We want people to get along, ride safely, respect each other. And so we've set up a set of rules and laws to make sure that that happens. In addition to that, when people don't behave, we've identified some restrictions for when they would be removed from the vehicle for a period of up from one day all the way to a year. And finally, it establishes some of this conduct activities as civil offenses where we can place a sanction anywhere from $50 to $500. So it's a new ordinance. We'll go into our code. We just wanted to bring it to your attention because it is something new to our city.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Any questions?
Any questions?
Not on that.
Appreciate it.
All right, thank you. Thank you. That was part A, and now we'll begin with part B.
On part C, do you go to another chair?
Part C is agenda item two.
We want to make sure you hit them all.
We can certainly do that. Like to introduce again Mark Sorensen.
Okay. Thank you, Mike. And with me is Wolf Grote, who's director of project development for Metro. And what we're going to do is just give you an update of where we are, and we're getting ready for our public meetings next week. for the Central Mesa Alternatives Analysis or the Central Mesa Corridor Study, whatever you want to call it. We call it Alternatives Analysis because we are following a federal process, and legally that is the title of the federal process. But let me just start a little bit and just tell you where we are. You know, this process has been going on now for about a year, year and a half. We have gone through several different steps to get us where we want to be. And currently we're in what we call the Tier 2 analysis. And the Tier 2 analysis, in layman's terms, is really just what we're trying to do is get to some detailed definition of the impacts, and we'll call them what these alternatives that we're looking at produce, both on the cost and ridership side, some of the conceptual environmental impacts, and to be able to provide the public and the decision makers a general understanding of what they get with each one of these different alternatives that we're evaluating. And so we're starting to really get into the meat of the matter, and that will be presented on October 14th of just really what is the ridership, what do these things cost, what kind of property impacts are there, and so forth. So there's quite a bit of detail in that. Our scope of work in this is we really looked at several different alternatives before we narrowed down to the Tier 2. We've had an extensive public involvement program where we've been literally canvassing the corridor, not just Main Street, but First Street and First Avenue. Our public involvement staff and your public involvement staff have been working very closely together to try to get a very good understanding of what's going on and what are some of the attitudes and what are some of the opinions of not just the tenants, but the property owners along that corridor. Economic development, big part of our study is to understand what are these alternatives, what is the potential for economic development, whether it's bus or whether it's rail, some experiences around the country to understand what's happened, say, in, we're using Dallas as one of our examples, and we're doing that for a number of reasons, one of which is it's a southwestern city, similar land use patterns to here. And also they've got some, we'll call them neighbor cities, such as Plano, which are very similar, say, to the city of Mesa. Engineering work, right now we're doing a very conceptual level of engineering to understand property impacts, left turns, cross sections of the streets, just to understand how, whether it's a bus alternative or a rail alternative, how it operates. And then we're just beginning to start looking at how this fits into the overall FTA criteria. As you know, to be able to get federal funding for these projects, there's a very strict criteria in which we have to follow to be able to get into that, we'll call it New Starts pipeline, so that we can have a chance for funding, whether it's, again, whether it's a bus project or a rail project. The alternatives that we're looking at are both bus and rail. We have actually two bus rapid transit alternatives and four light rail transit alternatives, and the only difference between the Main Street alternatives is really the cross-section of the lane configuration on Main Street. We have both a one lane in each direction for bus. The four lane is very similar to what you're going to implement in December, where we really have no physical impacts to the street at all. We're on the bus option. We just run the buses in the curb lane. On LRT, we have a two-lane option. Rail is in the median of the street on both options, and a four-lane where we have one lane of traffic in each direction on the outside of the rail configuration, or two lanes of traffic in each direction on the outside of the rail, where rail is in the median. And then we have a First Street and a First Avenue option that would transition to the north or transition to the south and avoid Main Street, and then coming back together, we'll say, in an area just to the west of Mesa Drive. We are also looking at park and ride locations. We've got two locations, or two general areas, I should say, that we're looking at, trying to understand what makes the most sense for park and ride. As you know, we would like to have about a 700-car park and ride lot at the end of the line station. And similar to what you have at Sycamore, where we have a large catchment area that we can have people that can park and ride. So we're looking at locations both at Horn and also at Mesa Drive. We're also included in this is a bus alternative that picks up from Superstition Springs Mall all the way to, whether it's a bus option to Sycamore, or whether it's a rail option to Horn, so that we can interface any kind of buses, we'll say further east from where this study ends, into the rail project. Just a summary of where we've been with some of our public involvement programs. We've had three public meetings with a total of over 300 attendees. The business forum that we had out at EVIT a couple months ago was highly successful. I know some of you were there. I think it went very well. We got a lot of good positive feedback from property owners, and I think there was some good, we'll call it real world experience from some of the property owners that have experienced the light rail construction and trying to understand how that went and how it worked. And I think we've made a lot of progress with working with some of those property owners, specifically related to how do you control construction impacts and how do you stage construction, whether it's a bus project or whether it's a rail project. Regular updates to your civic associations, you know, whether it's Downtown Mesa Association, Downtown Development Committee, and other city departments and staff. We've met with the fire department to kind of understand a little bit more about where we can and where we cannot operate, and what we need to do so that we don't infringe in any of their operations for emergency response. Door-to-door canvassing, Aaron and Jody and our staff and your staff have been talking to the residents and property owners on a day-to-day basis, trying to understand some of those concerns. And we also have a telephone hotline. Our Tier 2 public meetings, as I mentioned before, is we're going to be rolling out the results of our Tier 2 analysis. There's been a lot of questions at some of our earlier public meetings of how many people are going to use this and what's it going to cost. So we're finally at that stage of the game where we can begin to present that information. Costs are still in a very preliminary stage, but we think we've got enough contingencies rolled into those costs that we're at this level of analysis, we're about as accurate as we can get. So our public meeting is scheduled for next Tuesday on the 14th out at EVIT in Building 14 at the auditorium. We're going to have an open house format with a presentation and questions and answers, and hopefully it'll be well attended. We've tried to get the word out as best we can so that we can make sure that people know about it and have an opportunity to talk to us and express their opinions. Subsequent to that meeting, we will begin packaging a recommendation on what this project will, or what we would be bringing back to you for either an acceptance or modification of some sort. So after the public meetings, once we get some input, we'll be back to provide you with what we think is the recommendation to move forward. At this point, if anybody's got any questions, we'd be happy to answer them.
Thank you. Questions? None? I've got a couple.
Okay.
I've been to some of your other presentations that you have, and as we move forward, there's a couple things that I'd maybe not necessarily question, but just perhaps some observations. As we go through the different analysis, be it Main Street, and really the focus that we're going to have is Main Street, First Street, First Avenue. I mean, we all know that. I'd like to get as specific as we can in addressing some of the real concerns that our downtown merchants have. Main Street through downtown is, I think, unique on this entire line. This is not downtown Phoenix, and it's not anywhere else that you have. It's a very unique situation. And I think the concerns of some of the merchants, while they are things you've dealt with along the road with any merchant that fronts a light rail and the construction specifically, I think it is unique because of the makeup and because of what we're trying to accomplish. I also think the opportunities to explore some expedited construction schedules because of the Pepper and the First Avenue access to the backside of the stores, the ability to perhaps zone the construction. I think as detailed as we can possibly get, understanding the restraints that you operate under since we are in the conceptual stage here, but it seems like the more detail we can give to these merchants and perhaps some information related to the potential for accelerating construction or narrowing the construction gap, because, you know, we've heard estimates on how long it will take to get through that time and how long businesses will have a street torn up in front of them that have varied by quite a bit. I think the more information we have and the more planning you can do up front to say whether, you know, can we accomplish this in a few short months in an off season doing this, the better off we can be. So I'd ask as you go forward down the process, because that's that we can get that information as specific as we possibly can. That's going to be the big issue that I think we have to deal with as we get input from those stakeholders. The second thing is I've seen some of your preliminary cost estimates, and some of the things I'm hearing about the description on the routes, I'm having a hard time reconciling those with the cost estimates. And, you know, I don't pretend to be an engineer or to know that, but it just, for some reason, it doesn't pass the smell test as far as the differences between the different alternatives. It would seem like there are differences that jump out at you as it relates to, for example, Main Street versus First Street, First Avenue. One of the things that has been thrown out is that one of the pros for going down Main Street is that with prior construction, utilities were already moved. We don't have the same kind of challenge in shutting down for long periods of time because utilities have, for the most part, been moved, so that it will not be an issue. I would assume that if we're going to either First Street or First Avenue, that is not the issue, and we're going to run into the same situation that you've run into along the entire line, which is you're going to start digging holes and finding things that nobody knew was there. You also have more track. You also have the potential to disturb some property as you're going either one of those. And yet the differences in the costs don't seem to really reflect those potential differences. Those seem like they could be significant, even just track length and turning versus going straight. And yet I'm seeing cost estimates that really don't, I don't know why, they just don't mesh with what you would perceive. So as you go forward on those, if you could please, when you give out the cost estimates, get into some more detail for us and explain why those may or may not be different. Because the initial impression is that there should be a greater difference or variety between the cost estimates on one route versus another. And I'd like to really understand. I just don't see that now, and I don't know if others share that same concern. I just don't see it. And I haven't gotten an explanation as to why they would not be drastically different. And maybe there might be a very good explanation. I just haven't heard that yet. So those are my two observations on this. Any other questions? I'd also like to, I've been to, like I said, several of your presentations, and I think one of the benefits of being sort of on the second phase, so to speak, is I really appreciate what Metro has done to try and anticipate issues and how you've dealt with stakeholders, and all the feedback I've gotten from people along the route is that you truly have learned and put into place what you've learned in making this as painless as possible of a process. And I know it's never easy when you do construction, especially in the middle of a street, but the feedback I've gotten, what I've seen in your public meetings has been really commendable. I think you've done a great job in really taking care of the concerns of the stakeholders and trying to make it as least intrusive as it possibly can be. So I appreciate that and look forward to this process. This is exciting times. So thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Okay. Item number two, hear reports on meetings and or conferences attended. Nothing since Monday.
Nothing since Monday.
Good. Mr. Brady, number three, scheduled meetings.
Thank you, Mayor. Just to remind the council, we have coming up this Saturday, October 11th, District 6 Pancake Breakfast from 8 to 10 at Fire Station 212, which is 2430 South Ellsworth Road. And then we will have a next study session will be October 16th at 7:30 a.m., and that will be followed by a Community and Neighborhood Services Committee meeting. Also, just a reminder, we have, I believe the council assistants are working with the members of council to participate on the GAIN event, which is on October 18th. And also, just a reminder, we have the opening of our crime lab, which will be Thursday, October 23rd. I think the time now we scheduled for that is 3:45. And then Saturday, October 25th, is our City Hall at the Mall. That'll be at Superstition Springs from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. And also, Mayor and Council, I wanted to just give you some information. I know you've probably read in the paper, and we've been notified by HUD that we have been tentatively notified to receive $9.6 million from HUD for the Neighborhood Stabilization Program. We're actually still getting the training on how that program is to work, and that's happening actually today and tomorrow. The staff is out of town getting that training so we can understand how that program can be administered. The challenge for us is that's this week. We actually have to apply for these dollars. They're not necessarily just given to us, and that application is scheduled to go to HUD on November 24th. So it gives us less than 45 days after we come back to come up with the program. So what we'd like to do is to try to get in front of council over the next couple of study sessions to at least talk about what we understand the program allows and some of the thoughts we're having as moving forward, because one of the things we realize in order to administer this program, and I believe we have 18 months to execute the program, we are going to need to grow our capacity, and that means we're going to need partners in the nonprofit community and possibly even in the private sector, and we've just got to figure out what their roles can be and how they'll help us to interface with this program. So we'll want to be having that discussion very early on, probably even next week, with the council in a study session, at least then to tell you what we understand our responsibilities, because then we've got to go out and engage the nonprofit and other community partners so that they can put together RFPs to send to us that we can move forward. So it's going to be a pretty quick turnaround on this program, and as we understand it better, hopefully this weekend, then we can come back and start reporting to the council. So I just wanted to give you a heads up kind of how we're moving forward.
What's the name of the program?
Neighborhood Stabilization Program. And it's out of HUD. HUD is the federal agency.
The NSP from HUD, HUD.
Yeah.
Say okay.
The HUD NSP. Okay. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. Anything else? Oh, that's right. Do we have any requests to speak from citizens' presence? None? Then I'll entertain a motion to.
Hold on.
No, I'm sorry. You lost your chance. Okay.
And I guess I didn't see you, and I apologize. This is a quick highlight, because I know that everybody knows that City of Mesa is a very green city, and that recycling is very important to us. And we had a fairly significant event this past weekend. I want Scott to just give us kind of a results of what happened on Saturday at our household hazardous waste, because it is a very impressive program that not too many communities are able to provide. So, Scott, can you just give us kind of a summary of what happened on Saturday?
Definitely. Good morning, Mayor, council members. I just wanted to report out real quick. I'm Scott Boucher, the Environmental Programs Administrator, on our successful HHW event that we had on October 4th. We actually had 1,060 residents that brought materials to our event on last Saturday, and that's done in a four-hour period. And I would ask some of the residents as they're sitting in line how long they waited, and the longest anybody had waited was less than 15 minutes. So we were able to move over 1,000 residents through the lines safely in a very short time period. We collected over 15,000 gallons of household hazardous waste at that event, of which there were over 7,000 gallons that were latex paint. Now, that paint will be available in our paint reuse program through our solid waste department, because this is a collaborative effort between solid waste and environmental programs. And that paint should be available sometime the beginning to mid-November for reuse from the residents. And it's also used by our transportation department as part of our graffiti program.
Abatement program.
Yes.
We don't have our own graffiti.
Right. They're not putting graffiti out there.
Yeah, I wonder why that graffiti was many different multicolored graffiti. Now I know. That's good.
Sorry,
at least it's coordinated.
All right, sorry,
I like
about
that. It's not some random event. It's coordinated.
Yes.
That's good to know.
City sponsored.
In addition to that, we collected over 10,000 pounds of electronics at the event. I have never seen so many TVs at one of our events. I think maybe with the digital changeover, there's a lot of TVs that were coming through. But we basically filled up four semi-trucks with electronics and appliances that day. And then just to let you know about the upcoming events, on December 13th, we'll be having our next event, which will be at our Center Street Yard, located at 2412 North Center. We alternate between east and west sides on these events. The following event will be February 7th, back at the East Mesa Service Center. And then we'll be in April, we'll be at the Center Street Yard once again. All this information is available at mesaaz.gov. Some of the things that we've added to the program, there's an automated listserv, so you can get reminders about the event if you sign up for that. It's also a volunteer opportunity. We usually have volunteers that will work that event. You can do everything from greeting residents to Mr. Friedline's favorite is bulking oil when he comes to the events. And also you can see what items are acceptable at the event and some other means of other products you can use so that you're not creating some of this hazardous waste.
I had a question. Accept expired prescription medication? Because that's been a thing that I know I've never seen in this country we did that.
Prescription medication is difficult because of DEA regulations. We cannot take any controlled substances. So right now the guidance from EPA is to put it into undesirable containers such as like coffee grounds and put it into your black barrel actually. And we are working, there are groups nationally trying to work on ways to collect those prescription drugs because they are an issue. Mm-hmm. But right now, because of the DEA regulations, what it comes into is those controlled substances that we can't take.
Okay, thanks.
I was going to say, and all too often, then they just get flushed down the and end up at our wastewater treatment plant.
Thank you, Mayor.
Just wanted to give for you reminding us of that?
Yes, absolutely.
It's been in the news quite a bit lately. So
it just, anyway.
Thanks. Although we have not perceived a problem in our, as they have in some other cities, so hopefully our residents are doing a better job of putting it into the black barrels. Okay. Thank you. That was good. Thank you, Scott. Yes. Entertain it. Well, we're not adjourning. We're just we're moving into executive session to discuss the Mesa Proving Grounds Agreement. So we have a motion to move into executive session from Councilmember Higgins.
Second
from Councilmember Higgins, from Councilmember Summers. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. We will now move into executive session.